The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the December 2023 issue of Scout Life. We're going to begin on page 14. The Nature Crew, carnivorous plants, bugs everywhere. A blowfly is trapped on a carnivorous sundew plant. This is at the top of the page. We don't usually think of plants as predators, but some plants do eat insects and other small creatures. Since they can't chase prey, these carnivorous meat-eating plants have developed some clever strategies to capture their food. Of the hundreds of thousands of plant species, there are only about 800 that are carnivorous. They typically grow in wetlands or forests where soils are wet for at least part of the year. These soils are often poor in nutrients, so plants that get much of their energy from sunlight through photosynthesis need to supplement their diet with insects and other prey. Venus flytraps. The Venus flytrap is probably the most famous carnivorous plant. Native only to a small area in coastal North and South Carolina, it had been established as elsewhere in the United States, despite the name. Venus flytraps eat mostly spiders, crawling insects like ants, and smaller amounts of beetles, grasshoppers, and other insects. The Venus flytrap's hinge snap traps are leaves that look like little clams with big eyelashes. The inner surfaces are bright red to purple to attract insects and have tiny hair-like projections called cilia. When triggered by a bug, the cilia cause the tube lobe of the trap to quickly shut, trapping the prey inside. The cilia have to be touched at least twice so the plant doesn't waste energy on a false alarm. Once a bug is caught, it takes 3 to 20 days to be digested and for the trap to reopen. Sundews, which are Venus flytrap relatives, are some of the world's smallest predatory plants. They are low-growing and have greenish to reddish paddle-shaped leaves arranged in a circle. Sundews use a fly paper approach to trap prey. Their leaves are covered in tiny hairs that release a clear, sticky substance which both lures and traps bugs. Then their name comes from the sticky liquid that makes the plants look like they are covered in dew. Pitcher plants. Pitcher plants are found on four continents. In North America, they grow mainly in the eastern United States, but some grow on the west coast and in parts of Canada. The name comes from their tubular shape. The pitchers are leaves that function like a pitfall trap. Pitcher plants lure insects with their bright colors. Some also use sugars and odors. The pitcher tops are slippery, and if prey get too close and fall in, it's hard for them to escape. The victims drown in the pitcher's liquid, which includes enzymes for digestion. Pitcher plants are unique among carnivorous plants in that they also act as shelter for some wildlife that are able to avoid getting caught, including insects, spiders, frogs, and even bats. Butterworts and bladderworts. Butterworts grow in many parts of the world, including North America. Their leaves are succulent, they hold water, and arranged in a circular pattern. Butterworts use a flypaper strategy and catch insects with sticky leaves. and, like sundews, prey is digested on the leaf surface where they are caught. Butterwort also produces a substance that keeps insects from rotting while being digested. Bugs and other invertebrate animals aren't even safe out on the water. Some carnivorous plants called bladderworts are fully aquatic, and others grow in wet soils. Bladderworts use suction-like traps called bladders to catch tiny insects and aquatic worms. The bladders are hollow and have a flexible door and hair-like triggers that suck prey inside. Within about 30 minutes, the traps are reset again. Protect rare plants. Many carnivorous plants are now rare or endangered in their native range due to poaching, which is the illegal taking of plants and animals from the wild. You can help protect rare plants by not removing them from their habitats and always purchasing plants grown by reputable retailers. Make sure they are grown in nurseries. Other serious threats to carnivorous plants include overcollecting, habitat loss, and drought caused by climate change. Learn more about carnivorous plants at a local botanical garden or an arboretum. Now let's go back to page 14. At the bottom, the two people with the binoculars and a notepad. Bats and birds are their specialties, but wildlife biologists Selena Burgett and Burgett Kaiser and Mark Kaiser love all species of critters. Both have worked for the state of Florida and previously worked for Bat Conservation International on such programs as the Great Florida Birding and Wildlife Trail and the North American Bat House Research Project. Then going to page 15 at the top, we have the Venus flytrap, Pingula wacer butterwort. Then at the bottom of page 15, to the far right, the scientific name for the Venus flytrap is Donia muscipula. It was named for the Greek goddess Diana, whom the Romans called Venus. Muscipula means mousetrap. And at the very bottom, it takes only about 0.3 seconds for the Venus flytrap leaf to snap shut and trap prey inside. Some nicknames for pitcher plants are trumpet pitchers, frog breeches, and whippoorwill boots. Next we have Survive in the Snow, pages 16 through 18. Scouts hone their survival skills as temperatures fall into the single digits. Getting lost in the woods can be frightening. Now imagine you're lost and also standing ankle deep in the snow as temperatures plummet below freezing. That's downright terrifying, right? Not if you know what to do. For nearly a month, boys and girls Troop 427 of Wausau, Wisconsin, studied winter wilderness survival skills. Then they headed out for an overnight outing in the snow. They wouldn't really be lost, but they would practice using skills that would come in handy in case they ever were. Surviving in February, they discovered, comes with challenges they wouldn't have to consider in warmer temperatures. It's a lot different when it's 20 degrees outside, says Andrew Hackle, 12, a Tenderfoot Scout. Be prepared to survive. Whenever you go camping, you don't expect to get into a survival situation. But sometimes things go wrong when you're outdoors. That's why it's vital to understand how to react in emergencies, disasters, or after a poor decision. This is called wilderness survival. Preparing for outings and knowing what to do when things don't go as planned can help you get home safely if everything ever does go wrong. To properly prepare for a winter outing, bring warm clothing, preferably wool. Unlike cotton fabric, wool is warm and durable, and it keeps you insulated even when wet. Synthetic blends are also a good choice for underlayers. You don't want to get caught out in the snow without the gear you need, says Joel Del Conte, 17, a Life Scout. In the troop meetings leading up to the campout, the scouts discussed what they would need and what skills they'd work on: orienteering, shelter making, and fire building. Out in the cold. Right before the troops arrived at the Semaset Council Primitive Campground in central Wisconsin, it snowed. A lot. about a foot and a half covered the entryway, preventing the troops from entering the camp. We had to shovel it out of the way, Andrew says. As soon as they got through the front gate, the scouts began working on their shelters. After assessing your situation and rendering any necessary first aid, finding shelter should be one of your top priorities in a survival situation. The scouts unloaded a trailer full of pioneering spars and used a sled to drag them to camp. The first shelter would be an enormous lean-to. Setting up between three trees, the group attached spar to the trees about 5 feet off the ground, creating a horizontal bar. They laid more spars against the bar, securing them using square lashings. Then they laid down a tarp and covered it with hay, which would serve as a warm, cushy mattress on top of the cold ground. The scouts then built a quinzy, which you can make by hollowing out a pile of snow. They used bars and a tarp to give the shelter support and structure. Creating survival shelters turned out to be more satisfying than pitching tents. It's a lot more fun to see something you built be functional, says Carly Peace, 14, a Life Scout. Conquering challenges. Building shelters wasn't the only fun challenge that day. The adult leaders had a couple of patrol contests planned for the scouts, an orienteering course followed by a fire-building competition. The previous week, the adults had set up the course in the woods, placing orange markers next to sandwich bags. As the scouts took bearings and marched to each marker, they found the bag were filled with matches, birch bark, and dryer lint, perfect fire starters. The fire-building contest required each patrol to quickly ignite a small fire underneath a piece of twine and stretch nearly 2 feet off the ground. The objective was to feed the flame so they'd burn through the twine. I think fire building was the toughest. Our fire almost went out, Carly says. Campfires keep you warm, and they also help you cook some tasty meals. The troops did all their cooking over an open fire, making brats and kielbasa, as well as Dutch oven beef stew and mountain man breakfast, a delicious combination of sausage, hash browns, eggs, and cheese. The only time the scouts didn't use their culinary skills was during Cracker Barrel, a social time at the end of the day when they sipped hot chocolate and munched on Pop-Tarts. That's real survival food there, Joel joked. Chilled out. As the scouts crammed into their shelters, temperatures dropped into the single digits. I had to keep my saline solution for my contacts in my sleeping bag so it wouldn't freeze, Carly says. Some scouts awoke to frozen clothing. Tenderfoot Scout Michael Gravine, 11, says he and his fellow scouts developed valuable survival skills and enjoyed spending time together. It was pretty fun, he says. A survival story. During Cracker Barrel, the girl scoutmaster read a fictional short story for the scouts, To Build a Fire, by Jack London. In it, a man struggled to survive in the frigid Yukon Territory. In writing the story, London drew upon his experiences of hunting for gold in northern Canada in the 1890s. His most famous works, The Call of the Wild and The White Fang, were based on that gold rush, too. London's connection to scouting goes way back. To Build a Fire appeared in the January 1946 issue of Scout Life, then called Boy's Life, and The Call of the Wild and White Fang are listed in Scout Life's 100 books that every kid should read. Find the full list at gold.scoutlife.org/booklist. Treating hypothermia. Hypothermia is a deadly situation in which your body loses heat faster than it can produce it. Warning signs of hypothermia include drowsiness, confusion, fatigue, and slurred speech. If someone is showing these signs, move the person into a building or tent. Offer them small amounts of warm liquids and get them into dry, warm clothes. Zip them up in a dry sleeping bag and cover their head with a warm hat or the sleeping bag's hood. Watch the person closely and be ready to administer other first aid if needed. Seek medical care as soon as possible. And let's take a look at some of the pictures from this wonderful article. At the top, of page 17, we have Stephen Clement emerges from a Quincy, the Scouts Bill, while Evan Clausen, Xavier Harl, and Joel Del Conte stand behind it. A Quincy shields you from the elements and retains your body heat, creating a comfortable place to sleep. At the top of page 18, Scouts construct a lean-to shelter. They scatter straw on a large tarp and place the other half of the tarp on top to form a giant mattress. Joel Del Conte, Xavier Harl, and Zachary Hackbirth lash pioneering poles together to form the skeleton of a Quincy hut. And at the bottom of page 18, bottom left, we have Olivia Colton. She takes a bearing with a compass to find the next control point on an orienteering course. And far right, bottom right, Oz Weber clears snow around the campfire area. Page 19, at the top, Scouts hang out under their lean-to. And bottom left side, Zachary Hackbarth ties the main crossbeam of a lean-to shelter to a tree. Up next, Scouting Around. How to be a trustworthy, or how to be trustworthy and loyal. The Scout Law is a guide on how to live. Start putting that guide into practice by understanding the first point. A scout is trustworthy. That word describes someone who can be relied on to be honest. If you're honest, others begin to trust you. Would you trust someone who frequently lies or breaks their commitments? No. Tell the truth and keep your promises. That doesn't mean you must be perfect, but if you make a mistake, it does mean admitting it and trying to make it right. How does that point differ from a scout? It's loyal. Loyal means you are devoted to something, like another person, duty, or ideal. You show loyalty by your actions. If you're a loyal friend, you help your friend when they're in need. If you're a loyal patriot, you support your country and try to make it a better place. Living out the Scout Law reflects on your character. You do your best to demonstrate each point without expecting a reward. The more you put the points into practice, the more they become second nature. Watch out for avalanches and field book facts. Trekking along a mountain in the snow can bring great rewards, but it can also bring great dangers, like avalanches. An avalanche happens when snow breaks loose on a slope and tumbles down the mountainside, burying everything in its path. To protect yourself, know when, how, and where avalanches are likely to happen, then avoid those areas. Some indicators to be aware of are signs of previous avalanches, like lines or cracks in the snow or damaged trees. Where avalanches have happened before, they are likely to happen again. Steep terrain. Avalanches often happen on slopes greater than 30 degrees. If you're a skier, that's a black diamond level slope. New snow. It takes a while for fresh snowfall to stabilize. If you step on snow and hear a woof sound, the snow underneath isn't stable. Clear variations in snow layers. A weak layer in the snowpack can cause the layers above to break loose and slide. Weather. Changes in air temperature, especially rising near or above freezing, can trigger an avalanche. If you get caught in an avalanche, ditch your backpack and skis and begin swimming in the snow to keep yourself upright and your head above the surface. As the snow slows and settles, push snow away from your face to create an air pocket so you can breathe. Christmas in the Philippines, Scout Outings. Think about Christmas, and you'll likely come up with visions of snow, hot chocolate, and bundling up in warm clothes. In the Philippines, it's a prime time to go swimming, savor tropical fruit, and enjoy the outdoors. Several troops and adventuring crew in the BSA Far East Council met in Angeles City, Philippines, last December for Christmas camp. a five-day camp during which scouts worked on merit badges, visited World War II sites, and spent time with Filipino scout troops. The best part of Christmas camp was getting to know the Filipino scouts, says Naomi Francis, 17, a life scout with Girls Troop 109 from Okinawa, Japan. I made great friends and got a better understanding of life in another country. The Far East Council served BSA units in Asia and Australia. For nearly a decade, Troop 485 in the Philippines had hosted a camp around Christmas time. Last year, they invited scouts from Japan and South Korea to a countryside resort along with a troop from the Boy Scouts of the Philippines, BSP. The scouts had knot-tying challenges, ate traditional Filipino food, and helped in a Venture Summit Award Service project of redirecting water for a local school. The scouts also visited World War II sites, where they learned about the Bataan Death March, in which American and Filipino prisoners of war were killed. The scouts laid a wreath to honor those soldiers. It was nice meeting more scouts from a different country and learning about their culture, said DJ Barron, 14, a life scout from Troop 203 of Camp Humphreys, South Korea. Scouting connects youth like us with a common goal to make the world a better place by following the scout oath and scout law. Need a lift? Snowboarding and skiing. If you want to ski or snowboard, you need to first get to the top of the hill. At most ski resorts, you sit on a chairlift which carries you uphill. It looks simple, but to get on and off safely and efficiently, you need to keep your balance, be quick, and be aware of your surroundings. To take a chairlift, get in line and be ready to move quickly when it's your turn. Move into position and watch for the chair to come up behind you. When it does, put one hand down to stabilize yourself as you sit. Bring the safety bar down over your head, and you're on your way. Don't bounce or swing while on the lift. When it's time to get off the chairlift, lift the safety bar, position your weight over both feet, and stand up. Once you're off, focus on balancing and moving away from the unloading area so other skiers can get off too. Slopes may have T-bar lifts, rope toes, or platter lifts. All these lifts require you to grab the toe as it pulls you to the top of the hill. See online versions of Scout's BSA program featured for troops and crews at go.scoutlife.org/program-features. Scouts whose troops choose the suggested program theme for December can learn more in the Snow Sports Merit Badge pamphlet. And we have a picture here of someone about to do some snowboarding. Canoeing. Some ideas for your next merit badge adventure. Canoeing. Good position. Putting yourself in the right position while paddling a canoe will allow you to paddle longer with minimal discomfort. Cruising position. Kneel with your knees apart. Let your weight sit on the edge of the seat. Relief position. Kneel on the knee closest to the paddling side. Alternate this position with the cruising position to provide some relief on a long trip. For more information, go.scoutlife.org/merit-badge. Forestry. Increase your ability to identify trees by starting a collection of leaves. In the field, select small branches that show leaf arrangements and twig traits. Store collected leaves and small branches between the pages of a thick book. When you get home, put each sample between two sheets of paper and place a heavy weight on top of it. Wait several days, and then mount the leaves in a notebook along with notes about where and when you found them, along with the identity of each plant. Coin collecting. From 1793 to 1838, the United States Mint in Philadelphia was the only facility producing coins in the United States. Since then, four other facilities opened and later closed, and three others opened and remain open to this day. Carson City Mint, Nevada, 1870 to 1893, Mint Mark CC. Denver Mint, Colorado, 1906 to present. West Point, New York, 1984 to present. Philadelphia Mint, Pennsylvania, 1793 to present. Charlotte Mint in North Carolina, 1838 to 1861. Dahlonega, Georgia, 1838 to 1861, and New Orleans, Mint, Louisiana, 1838 to 1909. Signs, signals, and codes. Morse code is a method of communicating with a series of sounds or sights that can be understood only by someone who knows the code. Each Morse code symbol represents either a letter or number and is represented by a unique sequence of dots and dashes. The duration of a dash is three times the duration of a dot. Samuel F. Morse invented a code that was used to send messages over electric telegraphs in the 1830s. The SOS distress signal, three dots, three dashes, three dots, proved to be a simple way to communicate in an emergency. When the invention of the telephone and later two-way radios and cell phones, Morse code is nowadays used mostly just for fun by amateur radio operators. Certain amateur radio bands are still reserved for Morse code use. Now, how about a comic? Tiger's Adventures. Hey, Dad, where do snowmen keep their money?
Where?
In the snowbank.
How do you build a snow fort?
How?
With igloo.
What do snowmen call their kids?
What?
Children. How do snowmen greet each other?
How?
Have an ice day.
And what's the snowman's favorite food?
What?
Burgers.
How did you come up with all these jokes?
It's snow joke, Dad.
Oh, my. And finally, the Bear Bunch. Winter tips for staying warm.
Dress in layers.
Wear thick socks.
Eat hot soup.
Stay active.
Build a fire.
And don't forget the marshmallows.
And how about a few jokes from Think and Grin?
Trick, what do you get when you cross a snowman and a shark?
Dylan, no idea.
Trick, frostbite. That from Drake Eld in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hunter, why is it so cold during the holidays?
Drake beats me.
Because it's December.
That's from Heidi C. in Hill City, South Dakota.
Zane. Knock, knock.
Willie. Who's there?
Zane.
Alpaca.
Willie.
Alpaca who?
Zane.
Alpaca the suitcase. You load up the car.
That's from Zane A. in Winnetka, Illinois.
Karen, what kind of bed does Santa have?
Jim, I'm stumped.
Karen, a sleigh bed.
What's some Karen C. in Hopticon, New Jersey.
And finally, Liam, have you heard the joke about yoga?
Kyle, no, what is it?
Never mind, it's a bit of a stretch. That's from Liam K. in Charlotte, North Carolina. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.